the most couragey courage that has ever couraged.
Yeah, this is another one of those episodes where the courage fans will not like us. Hello, and welcome to Expected Own Goals. We're back, edition. I'm your host, Eric Morgan.
We are so back. I'm Evan Davis.
We are so back. Yeah, we are actually so back.
A couple of transfers to talk about today to like put the hopefully put a pin on the major moves. Abby Dahlkemper moving up the I-5 to Bay FC, where she is from, for a measly $50,000 in allocation money. And
Ana Diaz
is moving to Tigres.
Going to Tigres. Yeah. I saw that one. Portland had a lot of not elite strikers.
A lot of depth.
Some of which we saw on display this weekend as they posted their most anemic, I believe, XG total in this decade.
It's so weird when you don't
or
have,
at least second most
don't
anemic.
Have Sophia Smith, Janine Becky, and Morgan Weaver playing for you. Look what happens.
I think the shine on the Rob Gale era is coming. I think that that'll start rusting real soon. Mm. If we want to start with a little whip around the league, I think we saw a real gulf in class between 4 and 5.
Well, before we get there, I mean, what do you think about the Dahlkemper move? This feels about right to me in terms of money. She agitated for the move. She's 31. She lost most of 22 and 23 to pretty serious back injuries. And she hasn't had a very good year this year, even though that might have as much to do with San Diego's team-wide defensive issues than just her. But 50K for a player like that feels about right.
I never know.
I mean, there's no way for us to know because they don't report the actual, you know, what people are working against the cap.
How am I supposed to assess these numbers? And the answer is 50K seems like not a lot of money for a player transfer, but how much different is it? Like, at what point do we start saying, oh, that's a hefty fee that they paid? Is it 200K? Is it 250?
Yeah. That's why I say it feels right. Is it right? I could not say.
Yeah. Do you think this actually improves Bay's defense?
I think so. Yeah. I was looking at defensive net G plus per 96 above positional average data, not including the weekend's games. But yeah, Dahlkemper is an improvement. Would I play her with Emily Mengus? Maybe not. Maybe I'd try and get Kayla Sharple some more minutes, but we'll see what Albertine Montoya wants to do. Yeah, I mean, Dahlkemper traditionally has such savvy off-ball positional discipline, and has been, she's been marshaled to do a lot of on-ball defending this year because San Diego's midfield is Swiss cheese. So I think that's a step up from what they've had to deal with so far. You know, if you keep Mengus and Jen Beatty's minutes minimized, I think maybe the central part of your defensive spine can stabilize, but maybe not. I don't know. It's Bay FC. Who the fuck knows?
Is Bay now home to the slowest defense in the NWSL?
I mean, the Thorns have to be in the mix for that.
It's so close between the two. Yeah.
I don't know.
Let's talk about the matchup we didn't decide to cover this weekend. Boy, does it seem like there's a gulf in class. Certainly without your potent attack of Coffey and Sophia Smith and Morgan Weaver and Janine Becky.
Yeah, I don't really know how to assess the game because of how much talent Portland was missing.
Gotham was missing a fair amount of talent as well.
Yeah, but...
Or at least for the lion's share of minutes. And they just... Portland created nothing.
Well, yeah, again, I mean, their entire attack, now that Janine Becky is gone, really is Sophia Smith, because we don't know when Morgan Weaver's coming back. It's not like Gotham played that well in attack, though, you know?
They got an early goal by, you know, the never stopping now Ella Stevens.
But that's all finishing, you know? Like, that header is,
of course,
like, just perfectly placed to get past Shelby Hogan. So how much of that is really down to Portland being bad?
Gotham put together the narrowest passing map in the history of this game.
I know. I think some of that has to do with, like, Bruninha switch sides. So, like, a lot of her touches end up getting squeezed because they're just showing you the average spot where they take their touches. So it's a little bit funky. But I dubbed that the ancient blade, that formation.
I think you could put a pin in Portland having some real concerns on the comeback. Angel City wave. I think we were all curious about how the Landon Donovan experience would go, and I think the early returns are not good.
I mean,
like, really not good.
The charitable view, I suppose, is that he's trying to overhaul the team from the ground up, and it's going to take time, but also, why are you doing that with 10 games to go? You're an interim head coach. Like, just get them to the finish line. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah, especially considering that the finish line is, like, for a playoff spot, is not that far away. Abby Dogkemper scores her swan song goal in the 90th plus 7 minute.
Yep.
But of the 0.8 or so XG that San Diego created, almost all of it came when already down 2 goals.
Yeah, absolutely.
They were down 2-0 before they got their first shot. They didn't get a shot on target until the second half. The alleged pressing that we were supposed to be seeing, the on the front foot San Diego, was nowhere to be found. It was just a lot of incoherent single player run presses that were easily broken.
Yeah, I mean, pressing is definitely one of those defensive strategies that really needs to be coached and it needs to be coordinated. And so
totally. It's
just like it takes time to bed in. But again, why are you trying this now, Landon? That seems utterly ridiculous. Like, Angel City averaged a quality chance per shot. That's how much XG they were generating.
It was not good. And it's worth stating here that Angel City is not a good attack.
No.
Like,
exactly. This game had everything to do with San Diego, very little to do with Angel City.
Yeah, Angel City, like, are carrying a -9 goal differential going into this game. And by and large, they are, like, not that far off that, as just like, the underlying numbers suggest they're kind of about that bad.
Yeah.
And boy, they just feasted on a team that was once heralded as having an excellent defense.
Yeah, I mean, I guess this is also why you need Naomi Girma and not Kennedy Wesley in your setup.
Sure. But, you know, Alyssa Thompson breaking her goal duck after an entire season since last October, I believe.
Yeah.
Against Orlando, of all teams. She hadn't scored in nearly a calendar year.
But yeah, I mean, like, think about the players that Donovan was using to press. Maya Jones? Melanie Barcenas? Like, those are supposed to be your central attacking tools. And you leave Alex Morgan on the bench, who, for all of her flaws, pretty good defensive forward. At the very least, she puts a shift in.
Yeah, you know? I think the other thing that was nuts was to take that pressing approach with only 5 healthy outfield players on your bench.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And granted, all 5 of those got subbed.
Yeah.
But, yeah. I think the lone bright spot
is Fiend,
who chose the number 69. Can we just talk about what a choice, Delphine?
I know. I mean, I've been, you know, listeners know I've discovered the pleasures and the often fascinating ambivalences and contradictions of the sitcom Shorzy, which you can watch on Hulu, which is about semi-pro hockey in Canada. But the main character's number is 69 because he's trying to take the piss. And, you know,
apparently so is Delphine Cascarino.
I mean, listen, you watch that performance and all you can think of is nice.
Yeah. I mean, at that point in the game, Angel City had basically decided to sit back and absorb, thing that they are not good at doing either.
Yeah.
And Delphine Cascarino just had her way.
Yeah. It ruled.
Dribbling. Yeah.
I think even if you adjust for the game stain, I think that's just sort of Cascarino's level.
Yeah.
Or not far off of it.
I think she'll find greater trouble against teams that aren't that bad defensively.
Well, sure.
But yes, she took an Angel City team that is not very good and dribbled around it a lot and created the vast majority of what worked for San Diego when she came on the pitch.
Yeah.
All right, moving on to the Orlando Pride, surprising us all and allowing the Houston Dash to generate 1.3 XG and play a relatively close game.
Yeah, not the best Orlando's defense has been this year.
Yeah.
And then at the same time, they put up 2.8 XG, so it didn't matter. ASA's got their XG allowed a little bit lower. It's like closer to 0.9. But, I mean, this is a team that kind of prides itself on shut down tactical operations out of possession. But it really didn't matter. The 1-0 scoreline flatters Houston, quite frankly.
Yeah, that's right. Let's move on and talk about a game of great futility. Which one do you think I'm talking about?
Courage?
Oh, no. We'll get to that one. I was going to talk about the Royals and Bay FC. Bay FC, who just cannot help themselves.
No.
And the Utah Royals, who have already recorded half of the points required to hit Evan's median outcome for this team for the rest of the year.
I know.
That said, if there were a place on the schedule Utah was going to get points, home to Bay was one of them. what is wrong with Bay, and is anything right with Utah?
I'm intrigued. I want to make sure I get his name right.
Oh, Jimmy Conrates?
Yeah, but it's pronounced, the last name is
Conrats.
Yeah, it's like sounds like Conrats.
Conrats.
To the American ear, yeah. It strikes me as Conrats, which I think is very funny. Yeah. Apologies to our Belgian listeners who are offended.
Conrats is a great way of describing someone who cleans up after a training practice.
Which he's probably done in his life. Yeah. I think he's the youngest head coach since Mark Parsons took over the Spirit in 2013. He's only 29.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's nuts.
So clearly, hopefully, all the best to him that he can build a career in the States. Yeah, I mean, the new signings looked fine. Thought Zornoza and Tanaka looked pretty fine. But Bay was a shambles, as they tend to be. But they're getting Dahlkemper, so maybe that helps. Yeah, I don't know. This game was depressing.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know. Other than the Kundinanchi chance,
yeah,
Bay created effectively nothing.
Yeah,
for the vast majority of this game, a game that they desperately needed to win.
Yeah, big time. And this was the game. Like, if they were going to try and hold on to a playoff spot for the rest of the year, they needed to at least get 3 points from this game.
Yeah.
And they did not.
It's no, they did not. And even if they won the XG, they created the best of their chances after already trailing 2-0.
Mm-hmm.
When they were required to attack. Again, it's like, how does Albertine Montoya still have this job? Like, he must be so good at sweet-talking ownership. Because the performances on field, really shocking.
Yeah, I mean, we'll talk about like the value of defensive mistakes and what it might say about the quality of your team later on with Washington and Kansas City. But I will say that like a lot of what this team did poorly came down to defensive mistakes. But I do not believe those defensive mistakes were one-offs. They seem to really embody what Bay is defensively, frankly. That own goal from Emily Mengus, that's a self-inflicted own goal. Some own goals are accidents, like we'll talk about with North Carolina, and some are entirely your fault, and that was Bay's fault.
Let's move on and talk about the new look Louisville, Racing Louisville, taking on the Red Stars in a game that they absolutely needed to win, and
boy, did they
winning
ever.
Pretty convincingly. Yeah. Very much so. Bethany Balser, in addition to tweeting about her joy at how cheap everything is in Kentucky, looked really great in her opening cameo, created the assist for the Kanu opener, and this looked like a team that could be dangerous.
Maybe this is a signal that Bev Yanez is going to get her attack right for the rest of the year, you know? Like Alexa Barr.
Maybe.
Alexa Barr started on the bench. Kanu and Balser, I thought, were quite an effective pair, generally. Mm-hmm. Would have liked to see maybe them play in a three with Sears or Becky starting off. Mm-hmm. But like Becky's going to get in the 11 eventually. Yeah, no, they were pretty... I mean, 3-1 maybe flatters them a little bit, but not by that much. You know.
Yeah, for the same reasons that Rylan Turner probably didn't start for Portland, Janine Becky did not start because they had what, all of one training session together before this game. Janine Becky, I think, will fit nicely into Louisville's 4-4-2.
Yeah, and look good when she had her when she came on later in the game.
Yeah, I think that the other, like, do we give an incomplete for the Red Stars on this one? I mean, they're obviously missing Mallory Swanson.
Yeah, I mean, that's a big loss.
Who is so crucial.
Yeah, but I also think what we have discussed about the Red Stars defensively might be coming to pass because Hannah Anderson can hang, especially compared to the player she's replacing, you know?
Yeah.
Like, they looked oddly... Do I think this is true? Maybe I don't. I don't know.
Say it anyway.
I did have a couple of points where I thought maybe this is the most defensively disorganized I've seen Chicago all year. I don't know if I totally believe that. I'd really have to sit back and think about it, but they were a bit of a shambles. in ways that even when they are like inviting very, very deep pressure, they don't look that sloppy. And they were just kind of sloppy.
Yeah, I mean, Taylor Mullen comes off at halftime, and I felt like that was a sub that was really a team sub for everything not going right.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think it's worth overstating the effect of this loss on Chicago as much as it is worth stating that if this is Louisville sort of turning a corner, this Louisville team is in good shape. And the Red Stars, who had banked all these points coming into this game, need to be, you know, with one less game on the schedule, need to be a little more mindful because the teams directly behind them, Louisville and Angel City, both put points up this weekend.
Yeah. Flint and DeGrande, that pairing, I think, remains functional.
Solid.
DeGrande got a goal out of it as well. So, yeah, I mean, I think you look around the league and there are some teams who didn't play well, but you think that just might be a one-off. There's some who played well and you might think that's a one-off. I think that Louisville I think we saw the signs of consistent quality of performance going forward from them.
That I completely agree with. And let's get to our last tragicomedy, but one that broke in the rain's direction, which has been not the case for most of this season.
No.
The tragicomedy of when two tragicomic teams meet, one must win, and in a shameful manner.
It's like fucking the courage, rain, man.
The rain beat the courage, and decisively?
No. Well, yes. I guess, okay. Yeah. I said no because the goal they scored was a complete fluke, but everything that they had been doing up until that point
was working.
Was working, and they earned that. They earned that victory, even if the goal itself was a little bizarre.
My hesitations about Courtney Vine, I think, were laid bare in what was not a convincing opening performance. But it would be unfair to put any of that at Courtney Vine's feet. The Courage were beyond anemic against a team happy to sit back in the first half. They recorded no shots, not even no shots on target, just no shots in the first half.
Incredible.
It's incredible.
Yeah. Like that's actually incredible. Like this team brings in Courtney Vine. They but for the grace of God, do they get Caroline back, who did not dress for the game, but is going to play for the rest of the season. And then you do not get a shot off in the first half. It's just the most courage-y thing. As far as Vine is concerned, you know, like so much of Vine's game is timing runs in behind and having passers who are willing to try and thread through balls to get to her. And that's not really how the Courage function in possession. And it's obnoxious, but like they tend to keep a lid on such behavior. And like Ashley Sanchez's skills are being kind of like, not is reined in the right word, like the things that she does really well.
Harnessed possibly,
yeah.
I think, but not in the pleasant way, like the way one harnesses a horse.
I she was drifting to the right so much, which is the space that Vine occupies, and Vine's instinct is to not drift centrally off the ball, so all of a sudden there was some bunch ball happening. And they were not really solving those problems on that right wing. And they really wanted to go down the right wing a lot. Like Ryan Williams was, I think, the primary progressor for maybe the entire game. It just did not look particularly fluid. And it's like, if you're going to have Vine in your team, like use Sanchez as a playmaker the way that she's designed to be from first principles, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was just like,
man,
it was so lame. I just kept thinking, like, man, you guys look so fucking lame.
Yeah, we talked
shots,
about the tiers.
Four shots the whole fucking game.
We talked about the sort of tiers of teams last week, and this weekend felt like North Carolina and Portland, who I think put up a combined 0.6 XG over 180 minutes. That mid-tier, that 5-6 tier, feels reasonably far off that top four.
Yeah.
Let's move on and get to our primary matchup, which was 2 versus 3 in the table.
Yeah.
And now those positions have swapped. Evan, do you think the Washington Spirit were the better team in this 4-1 victory.
I think that the Washington Spirit was the team that capitalized on a small handful of isolated mistakes. And that's the reason that they won the game. And also some otherworldly finishing.
I don't even necessarily think I would call it otherworldly finishing as much as I would say, I think we both agree that Kansas City had a fair amount of like misfortune. I think of like the Trinity Rodman goal as like peak misfortune.
Yeah.
But I felt like the Spirit really took advantage of a Kansas City team that got kind of dragged out of what they wanted to do in the game. Like, they were pressing very actively to begin with, but on that Mattire counter, no one comes to pick up Paige Mattire.
Totally.
For the entire length of her run.
Sure.
And she sort of just waltzes into the box and takes a pretty terrible shot.
Yeah, Paige Mattire's a right back.
And normally what a defender is supposed to do in that instance is step up and force the attacker to make a choice. And no one steps up to Paige Mattire because, to be fair, every attacker she's going to pass the ball to is more dangerous than she is. And so where Paige Mattire ends up finding herself is on her left foot about 15 yards from goal. And she just passes the ball near post on 0.05 XG chance and a 0.11 post shot XG.
Yeah.
And beats Adi Franch to the near post.
Well, you can also see Adi Franch touch the ball with her outstretched hand and then the ball just goes under her hand. Like that goal, yeah, goal is because of Adi Franch.
Yeah, I continue to feel like for all of the value that Kansas City has created in XG goal differential, Adi Franch is about the biggest single game liability player that any of the best teams in this league have. And it's not close in my mind. Like she has been okay in goal this year, but you give me a choice between, let's just call them the top four, of Anna Morehouse, Aubrey Kingsbury, and Ann-Katrin Berger, who is basically the anti-Adi Franch at this point.
Yeah.
And Franch is, I think the other three make that save without thinking about it.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think that's totally fair.
And Franch made a meal.
I mean, yes. My perspective on this game is that the Current have a brand new center back pairing, one of whom is a new transfer, the other of whom was never intended to be the starting center back,
no.
Stina Balasagar. And then all of a sudden they're paired together. They've never played together except in training and whatever summer cup friendlies that were happening the last couple of weeks. This is their first time playing in a competitive environment, and they looked like they weren't communicating. Frankly, you know, I think it was on the Sar goal where Balasagar had completely crossed over to the other side of the box.
Correct.
And Cook, wily vet that she is then all of a sudden like, oh, fuck. And she has to go bolt and try and cover the space and is not able to get there in time. And Sar has a pretty clean look at goal and she scores. Like, that is the kind of stuff that feels like can be solved after some time together on the training pitch and not necessarily something that's going to continue in the long term. So I'm a little bit less concerned about that for Kansas City. The Franch stuff is not good. And when you have a center back pairing that is not functioning well together, then there is more opportunity for Franch to make a mistake. You know, like you are leaning into the risk that Franch poses when you're not solid with the two players right in front of her. So I think those two things in tandem is really what explains the first half.
Moreover, Haley Mace, who plays this really, really loose back pass that is what Croy Bethune intercepts.
And then passes to Sar, yeah.
Yeah, it's a back pass to theoretically Alana Cook, who is not where Haley Mace expects her to be.
Yeah, again, lack of communication, lack of coordination.
The ball is criminally bad. It basically looks like an attacking pass right into Bethune's path.
Sure.
And Bethune, to your point about the sort of the mix-up between Balasagar and Cook, Bethune is literally like air traffic controlling Ulimata Sar about where she wants her to run.
Yeah.
And then plays an inch-perfect ball. But it's not like this it is wildly being communicated to Uli Matasar what is expected of her. Mm-hmm. And Balasagar and Cook can do nothing about it. And Bethune just plays what turns out to be her, was that her 9th or 10th assist of the year?
10th. She's tied the all-time single season record.
With Tobin Heath. And she has 9 games to go.
Oh, yeah. No, she's going to shatter that thing.
She's going to get that record. But Bethune just reads the moment perfectly. And to Franch's credit, I actually think Franch plays this Sar chance pretty well.
Yeah.
Like, reads all of Sar's body language. It's just Sar does what you're supposed to do. Keep it low, play it under the keeper to the far post, bring it back across. And she does, and she tucks it in.
And again, FB Ref tags that goal for a post shot of 0.84, I think. Which is just like, that's pretty much a no-doubter. Not much a goalkeeper can do about that.
When you're hitting the side netting, generally speaking, you're doing something right.
Right.
Just net side of the post, you're doing it right.
Mm-hmm.
That said, Kansas City, who have so many times this year come out and jumped teams in those first 20 minutes, got jumped in this game. And I think it was Washington being pretty prepared for the jumping, because Washington wasn't pressing.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
No, they sat very deep. I was actually kind of surprised at just how compact they were. Like, I mean, legitimately, Trinity Robbins spent a large chunk of the game as like a right-sided defensive midfielder.
Yeah, it was like a right wing backy, right defensive midfielder.
It's what she does. She was just a little bit more narrow, but she was really living in the defensive half.
Absolutely. And I felt like, for all of what we didn't get answers about what like Jonathan Giraldus's new look spirit attack might be, we did get answers about like understanding your opposition and how to potentially beat them in their approach, particularly in those first 20 minutes. And I wonder if this approach isn't for some of the better teams in this league, because I don't think everybody can do this because I think Kansas City's too talented. But I wonder if not for some of the better teams in this league, many of whom Kansas City will play in this last 10-game stretch, if this wasn't like a guidebook to how to face Kansas City.
So let me push back on that just a little bit.
It's a question. It's like, is this the handbook?
I see. I don't know if Washington pulled it off quite as successfully as it might appear by the scoreline.
Sure. I know that. I think that's right.
I know that the Chiwenga goal is very game state influenced, because Kansas City is down 3-0 and Washington doesn't have to play as open as they were in earlier part of the game. I get that. But I'll point to, since you brought up the first 20 minutes, I'll point to the Vanessa DiBernardo chance, which is DiBernardo crashing the box, running onto a cutback from Ellie Wheeler in fairly open space until right at the moment she takes the shot. And, you know, FB Ref has that as a 0.12 XG chance. ASA has that a little bit higher at 0.19, because she's taking it from the center of the goal mouth from 10 yards out on a cutback on the deck, in relatively open space until right at the last second when there's a little bit of pressure. The shot ends up going wide of the post, but in the lead up to that shot, Wheeler has kind of free rein to get to the byline. And Washington's looked kind of out of sorts. It felt as though Kansas City had effectively kind of pulled them apart.
Mm-hmm.
That was something that was the most obvious example of what Kansas City was trying to do in that first half. Temo Chiwenga's chance right before halftime, which was barely shown on television because it happened right as the camera was cutting to the fourth official showing how much stoppage time there was. But Kansas City's pressure forces a loose ball from Aubrey Kingsbury that Chiwenga pounces on and is able to pop a shot off that ends up getting blocked. And block shots are funny with XG. Like, some models will rate them lower, some models will rate them higher. ASA has that as a 0.16 chance, which, given like the lead up to the shot, I think is kind of fair. But that was, both of those are the most obvious examples of Washington being a little bit sloppy. For the rest of the game, they did not allow good chances until Chiwenga scores, which is, again, game state influence.
Yeah, and really the only time in this game where Chiwenga had the opportunity to get in behind and be on the end of a through ball.
Yeah.
And as is the case, when Temwa Chawinga gets in behind and gets on the end of a through ball, good things tend to happen for Kansas City and tragic things tend to happen for the opposition. That said, again, the game state, this is Washington just sort of mentally tuning out for a minute.
Yeah.
But to give Washington some credit here, they grabbed their two goals early, settled in, and played, I thought, pretty solid defense, all things considered. We've got some discrepancy here in the XG models. FBref has it at 0.9. ASA has it at 1.5. But I felt like Washington played pretty solid bend, don't break, keep a lead defense.
It's definitely what,
for the vast majority,
definitely
of
what they
game.
Were going for. It was obvious in the way that Mateo stayed at home, Rodman pulled deep and inside, Andy Sullivan, Hal Hirschfeld, and Lacy Santos essentially all just like tried to fill space in the middle, because you don't want Chawinga or Dabinia or DiBernardo getting free. And so, you know, Jonathan Giralda said after the game, he praised the team for how well they defended Chawinga. And I think you could point to letting Chawinga score in an admittedly game state influenced second half, or the chance that she had right before halftime would suggest that Chawinga is just so good that not even she can lay waste to the best laid plans. But it is obvious what Washington was attempting to do. It was attempting to establish control and attempting to establish no amount of space in what is essentially like zone 14, the central area, the final third, and the box for players to wriggle free. And so to your question, is this the game plan? I think it can be the game plan. Orlando did something kind of similar when they beat Kansas City just before the break. But the question is, which defenses are good enough to pull it off? That's the open question, because Chawinga is just so unbelievably deadly. You asked actually before we started recording, are Kansas City flat track bullies? Mm-hmm. So based on FBref's XG model, I looked at the five games they've played against top five opposition. So they've played Gotham once, they've played Orlando once, they've now played Washington once, they've played Portland twice. Should come as no surprise that their most dominant fixtures were the Portland matches, where they...
Who I think maybe we cannot include in this elite top four, but yes, go on.
And if you believe FBref's model, then Gotham, Orlando, and Washington were basically played to a draw on the XG front. There's really no daylight between how much XG they generated and how much they conceded. And on both of those counts, it's in like the league average area of those metrics, which means they're not like, you know, generating tons of XG, but also giving up a ton of XG either. They're just sort of like in stasis. Now, I wonder, and we'd have to do this systematically. I was actually just going back and rereading an article on ASA about parity and how XG is better at predicting leagues with more disparity than it is predicting leagues with more parity. And there is a subsection of that where they bucketed XG differential between teams in Europe where disparity is larger. Basically, like how do top sides play against top sides? How do bottom sides play against bottom sides? And how does everybody play against everybody? And also, how do top sides play against bottom sides? Well, turns out the XG is the least predictive and least indicative of performance quality in the games where top sides are playing top sides. So we talk about flat track bullies a lot in this sport, but I do wonder, is KC just sort of fitting a pattern here and not necessarily an outlier when we look at the kinds of performances they put in against Orlando and Gotham and Washington? You know, that's a subject for further study, but I think it is important to note that this may be the norm and not the exception.
And that's sort of what I wanted to get at with the question about being flat track bullies, because in this run-in, Kansas City have a lot of teams that are currently in playoff places. Of this top four, which they are a member of, if we want to call them that, they still have the Spirit at home. They still have Gotham at home, and they go to Orlando.
Yeah.
We're both in agreement that Kansas City are a very good team and belong in this top four, and I think are roughly equivalent with these other teams, but I think it's possible that AD French or players or this back line not having a lot of minutes logged together could be the difference between Kansas City winning the Shield and dropping.
I think that's very real. I mean, there's no guarantee that Cook and Balasaga are going to figure it out. And if they don't, then French is exposed and some things can get a little wonky. I mean, North Carolina on the road is not going to be an easy game either, especially with the amount of control that they're going to want to try and play with. Maybe Louisville on the road will present a stern test. So there are places where points can get dropped, and then the three games you just mentioned are also in play. You know, maybe the better question is, like, this team is going to be a playoff team, so what will they be like once the playoffs start, when things really start to matter? And how do you isolate their true level once you get to the playoffs, because then you're just playing better teams versus that fact that everybody is just playing better teams. And so everybody's going to look potentially worse or more mediocre than they had in the regular season when they had easier teams to beat up on. That I don't know about. I mean, the thing we've said all season, to your point, is if you can figure out Chiwenga's pace, if you can figure out ways to cut off her supply lines, does Kansas City kind of fall apart? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, like...
By the way, I don't think you can... I think we are far enough into this season to say, I don't think you can figure out Chiwenga's pace.
No.
I think you can attempt to contain it. I don't think you can figure out Kansas City's attack entirely.
Yeah.
I think you can hope to contain it. What I think gives me pause is that of all of the question marks that each of these top four teams have, and they are all imperfect teams, I like the ones that Kansas City has the least.
Hmm.
I don't love that center back pairing, which may sort things out. And I really don't love starting AD French in goal.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you're not wrong. You're not wrong to center those issues. Because if those issues persist, then it doesn't matter if Chiwenga and the rest of the attack are high-flying. If you're back to the bad old days of March when you were giving up four goals a game, then all it takes is one bad attacking day, and then you're losing 4-3 rather than winning 5-4. And if it's the playoffs, well... then you're going home.
You had had questions about how Lacy Santos, how you get all this talent on the field at once.
They did it.
They did it.
And Santos is, for whatever grousing I may have about the actual quality of Washington's attack over the weekend, Lacy Santos's goal was their best chance of the whole game. And it was a beauty. It was a true beauty.
I had a moment where I was like, Gabby Carl, tell the truth. That ball was over the line. That was out of bounds before you crossed that, right? But it wasn't reviewed, and no one seemed to have an issue with it. I thought it was closer than that. But obviously, where it gets to Lacy Santos and then what Lacy Santos does with it are both just, it's an ideal place to receive the ball and an ideal finish right after it. I think I like what we saw in terms of a more defensive Rodman plus Santos often overloading that right side.
Yeah.
At times. I like the potential of the two of them playing together a lot. Mm. I liked that Lacy Santos had a fair amount of freedom in front of Sullivan and Hirschfeld. I don't think it generated maybe as much offense as we would have liked. It generated a good looking scoreline, but Washington, to come down hard on Washington in this game, didn't create a ton.
No.
Beyond capitalizing on those early mistakes.
And, you know, maybe that was very intentional. Until they play Orlando on the road, there are a lot of points for them to grab.
Mm-hmm.
And they got Kansas City again on the road. So it's those two games. And the rest, maybe they can stretch out a little bit, and you just know that you have to swallow. I was like, didn't Pep Guardiola, like, play four center backs against Liverpool last year in his back line or some shit?
Yeah, he went all Germany 2014 on the world and just decided that fullbacks weren't that useful.
So, like, in the big games, this is something that top teams do.
They can, certainly.
And then will Santos have more license to get into the attacking third than she did, or at least with more consistency than she did against Kansas City. Yeah, probably. I wouldn't be surprised. Mm-hmm. But she looked really good. She looked really good.
Yeah, and credit to Giraldez for basically, I don't know what he said to Trinity Rodman, but for saying to the Olympians, like, hey guys, this Kansas City fixture, right when we're back, I know you have a lot of vacation. We could use you.
Yeah.
And frankly, all of the Olympians got reasonable usage.
Yeah. Hirschfeld played, Kruger played, Bethune played, and Santos played, and most significantly, given the amount of
Rodman
minutes in her legs, Rodman played. And
whether it was advisable or not, Rodman played.
And she didn't get pulled to the 79th minute. Just incredible. I mean, maybe they'll get some time off in the next fixture, but I for whatever reason, maybe Washington, because yeah, Germo didn't play, Coffey didn't play, Smith didn't play, Lynn Williams didn't play, I don't think, right?
Rose Lavelle got subbed on. Nyswanger started.
Yeah, Nyswanger started, but also she was fresh. Yeah, no, Williams didn't play. Mm-hmm. And Dunn didn't play. And then, you know, in the Chicago game, Swanson didn't play. So, like, basically the teams that carried a lot of national teamers, U.S. national teamers, gave them the week off, or were just told that they were gonna have to give them the week off. But yeah, Giraldez got buy-in. And everybody suited up for Washington. That's kind of cool.
We're going into a stretch run. For me, Kansas City have the most crucial question marks in that center back pairing and what to do about AD French. Mm. Of those top four teams, if we want to call them that, have the least question marks for you. Like, what team would you pick?
It's interesting.
And Kansas City is a totally viable pick here. I mean, their XG differential says enough.
Yeah, I mean, the mental space you have to put yourself in is like, can Kansas City hold on to a top four place? And then what are they? Yes. And then what do they do in the playoffs? Like, are they prepared to win three tough games in the span of, you know, 3-4 weeks? I mean, you're right. It's just like, can Cook and Balasagar get on the same page? Can Elizabeth Ball get healthy? That's an open question right now as to whether or not she's going to come back. If Ball can come back, then that stabilizes.
I mean, she was on the bench.
Yeah. So that could be a sign that this really is just a blip. That, like, once you get Balasagar out of there, once you get Cook settled, once she has a little bit more time to, like, figure out the system, then it's just steady Eddie. But they've built up such a large lead that top four seems pretty likely no matter what happens.
Oh, a thing that we could take away from this weekend is that the four teams currently in the top four will be the top four, or likely will end up being the top
four. Yeah, so then, like, whatever questions you have are, like, do they have enough to win a 3-round knockout tournament over the span of a month? I think they probably do, especially if Ball can get healthy and come back. But that is maybe more of a concern than one might have about, say, Washington, who I didn't think played all that particularly, like, dazzlingly, but flashed what Lacy Santos can bring to that squad. Orlando, I don't think, you know, Carson Pickett didn't start. She didn't have a lot of time to train, so hopefully that's all that is. But
she did get on the field.
If you are going to, I mean, like, what was, I got to look up Orlando's 11, because, like, what they actually did was insane. And it was driven by the fact that Bree Martinez is hurt. But it also kind of goes to show, like, there are just these little spots where maybe their depth isn't quite as strong. Yeah, like, Corey Dyke started. Kylie Strom was the center back. You know, I don't love that. And you have to get Pickett starting once she's settled. So I await Seb Hines's plan with great interest.
But of these top four teams,
that's what I'm talking it through. I'm trying to figure it out for myself. Like, I'm going to Gotham now. Like, Gotham is, even with the way that they played against Portland, like, fucking hell. how can you have this much attacking talent and this high level of pressing defensive structure, and you still can't put good looks in front of goal? I just, like, I will go to my grave. You will put on my epitaph, "Here lies Evan Davis, 1985 to whenever." What? How did the Juan Carlos Amoros Gotham FC not score more? You know?
Yeah, I look at this Gotham team, and it's just like, it reminds me a lot of the France 2018 team that won the World Cup, where I'm just like, they never got out of second gear. And when they weren't forced to get out of second gear, they surely didn't try. And yet they just kept racking up victories.
Yeah.
Now, granted, a club that wins seven games, you know, or a national team that wins seven games over the course of a month is one thing. But Gotham, and it was so funny watching them against Portland. It's just like, once they have a lead, unless something changes, they just don't seem that, like, bothered to do it.
Well, the thing is, they don't seem all that bothered, like, when they don't have a lead either. That's what's so weird.
Yeah, no, they just don't seem that bothered.
Yeah.
And it's like, just odd. I suppose for me, I think Orlando at this point is just the team that, like, I would choose their set of problems first.
Mm.
Like, they have my favorite set of problems.
Mm-hmm.
But Gotham just has this, like, stupid consistency.
And whatever, man.
Not always the right kind of consistency.
Defense wins championships.
Yeah. They are good. And we saw it again this weekend. They for as little as they looked bothered against Portland got nothing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I think Kansas City, I have probably the greatest reservations about.
Yeah, I mean, I hear that. I do hear that.
But I think you're a little more like...
I kind of think they'll be fine, though. That's the thing.
I think all these teams are going to be fine. Getting a home playoff game is a fine start.
Yeah.
And if Kansas City can hold on to a first or second, they can run the table at home.
Yeah, and I just want to remind everybody that Gotham has the second most amount of turnovers that they've generated in the attacking third. And... they have granted the third most number of shots from said turnovers. But then when you, like, normalize that and look at it as, like, how many turnovers in the final third does it take for them to put up a shot? And they are seventh.
Yeah.
Such an effort to actually, like, make their pressing an attacking weapon. It's just wild. Wild.
So give me a team. Just to close this out,
yeah,
this weekend, because I don't think it's either Washington or Kansas City. What team, with their performance this weekend, changed your priors about them most?
Changed my priors about them?
Like, what you believed about this team, what...
For good,
what,
or for ill?
Team, for good.
For good. I mean, I don't know. I mean, like, Orlando ripped Houston apart underneath the scoreline, so, like, did that really change my view of them? No, not really.
Yeah, I don't think it did.
We've talked the Kansas City Washington issue to death. Gotham is playing like Gotham, so I'm not really chuffed by it. I mean, and there's not much nice to say about Portland right now until they can get, you know, their starters back. So, yeah, I don't know if anything really shifted all that much for me, at least in a positive direction, except for maybe Louisville. But Louisville's not top four team, so.
Yeah. It wasn't a question about top four teams. It's just what team in the league changed.
Oh, yeah. Like, maybe Louisville. I think Louisville's got they've got the biggest ceiling with the additions of Balser and Becky. I think they have the opportunity to do something really special.
I agree with you. And what team do you think most negatively changed your priors about them?
Well, again, everybody's got an asterisk, you know? Like, even with... I mean,
totally. By the way,
NC.
Not changing,
I mean,
your priors very much is valid. Is like totally valid here.
I'll say North Carolina, but also with the asterisk that Caroline isn't back. But they were so bad. They were so bad, and had fewer excuses with regard to personnel than some other teams.
Yeah, you for know. Me, Louisville, I think most positively affected my view of them.
Sure.
This weekend with their performance, I think. In terms of, like, negative views, I was, like, aghast at the Landon Donovan experience.
Yeah, I mean, once you get Jaden Shaw back, like once you get Naomi Girma back, like I think that looks a little bit different, but I get what you're saying.
I do not have a high opinion of this Angel City attack, and they just, they looked like a different team.
I know.
And it was like, is it a different team or is it just how bad?
I think that San Diego very well could miss out on the playoffs. I don't know if they'll ever turn in a, that level of performance again. Once they get their horses back in the stable, you know?
But yeah, I think it's also just like Bay had another head scratcher. Utah didn't change a ton for me.
Mm.
In terms of, obviously, I don't think Kansas City's performance concerns me greatly.
Not that obvious. You've had a lot of worry in your voice when we talk about them today.
No. What I mean is like, we're talking about a team that like, maybe goes from being the best team in the league in my mind to like the third best team in the league in my mind at worst.
Yeah, I think we have a, but I'm saying this as much for myself as anybody else is like, because of the way the playoffs work, you have to bear in mind how little the Shield ultimately matters in practice. We might agree in principle that it should matter more. But really, all that really matters is making sure that you have at least one playoff game at home. You're only going to have two opportunities to have a playoff game at home, but at the same time, like the playoff, like the tournament's chaos. You know, like ever since it went to three rounds, like the Kansas City Current should not have been playing in the 2022 NWSL Championship. The Washington Spirit in 2021 probably should not have been doing the same. Gotham probably should not have won the whole thing last year. You know, if we're just talking about like on paper quality of the best teams in the league, like anything goes, anything can happen. Winning the cup does not necessarily reflect your level of talent or quality in the aggregate. It just means that you won three football games in a row. That's all it means.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we
after positioning yourself well, or actually not that well.
Once again, Allie Krieger goal line clearance on the final day. It's the only reason Gotham won a championship. You know, we gotta. I have to do a better job at like focusing on that. And so, like my concerns, whatever issues you have with the top four right now, ultimately become negligible because it's like, how are they gonna do once the calendar turns to November? You know?
Yeah, and what I'm getting at with the 80 French thing is it's just like, ugh, if I have one game.
Yeah, I know.
In a one-off game, I hate that problem most.
I hear you.
All right. Well, we will be back later this week with our Patreon.
Yeah, if you're not a member of our Patreon yet, subscribe for only $6 a month. The link is in our show notes. Go to patreon.com/xowngoals. That's the letter X Own Goals. $6 a month gets you 4 bonus episodes every month. It gets you access to our Discord server where you can hang out with the best and weirdest sickos in women's soccer history. You are going to be treated to our monthly-ish YouTube watch-alongs, which we think Orlando KC in middle of September is going to be the next one for one of those. You also would be able to participate in our mailbag. We're doing a mailbag episode this week on Patreon, so you'd be able to ask questions that you would like to hear answered. So all of these privileges are available to you for a very reasonable price, in my opinion. So why don't you go on over to patreon.com/xowngoals and sign up today.
Also, we would love it if you would review us.
Oh, we do. Yeah, we do would like some more reviews. Wherever you listen to your podcast, reviews do help in more ways than you might think. It helps activate the algorithm to push our show into the feeds or the recommendations of those who might not be listening to the show already. Ratings as well. If you haven't rated us, rate us 5 stars if you would be so kind.
Please.
And yeah, drop a review if your podcast listening app of choice offers you that option. We would really appreciate it because we want to make this as big a tent as possible. And we are growing faster than we ever could have imagined, but we're greedy. We want more, more, more. So yeah, leave a review.
Please.
A review.
Yeah, we'll be back with mailbag questions for our Patreon subscribers later this week.
And then next Tuesday for our regularly scheduled programming.
It had been brought up on the Discord, but how we typically pick our games of the week were, you know, like the game we break down. is usually we watch most of, if not all of, the games over the weekend, and then we decide on the one we
want. You take that we out. You try to watch most or all of them. I do watch all of them because I'm insane.
Yeah, you're an insane person. That's correct. I try.
Yeah.
But we will start trying to announce what we think our episode.
Yes. And it was kind of important this weekend because we knew we wanted to do Washington, Kansas City. So it was easy for us to announce that. It was a big fixture. Jonathan Giraldez's first regular season game. But it was helpful, I think, for people to know that ahead of time because the game was on CBS Sports Network, which is the most difficult way to watch any kind of sporting event on the planet. So people having some lead time gave them the chance to figure out how to make that happen. But we like to spread the wealth. We don't want to play favorites and talk about one team a lot more than another team. We like to talk about the game that ends up being kind of the most interesting one from our tactics and data points of view. So we like to be able to like have, you know, the data in hand and all of the viewing in hand before we make that decision. But we hear you. We will try and announce what we're watching at the start of the weekend rather than at the end of it to help you guys watch along whenever we are able to do that. I mean, you can guess some of the obvious ones, like Orlando KC. We'll be talking about that weekend, you know?
All right, Evan, I'm going to read you off the fixture list right now. We're just going to do a little preview
for this weekend.
We think about this. Yeah.
Okay.
We got the Thorns and Bay on Friday night.
Okay.
We got Louisville and the Rain.
Okay.
On Saturday. We've got the Dash and Utah on Saturday. I don't think we're doing that one.
Oh, come on, Dad.
I'm gonna pull that one from the pile for us. We have got Angel City and Chicago, which we will be at
live.
If you are in the greater Los Angeles area,
come to BMO.
Come to BMO.
And we'll be hanging out at the Sunset Lounge after Final Whistle. So we'll do a little meetup. Anybody in LA who's listening to the show and wants to come hang out, come by the Sunset Lounge on the roof of BMO Stadium. Okay, so Angel City,
so
Chicago.
Angel City,
that's
Chicago.
Not bad. That's not bad.
It's not bad. We've got the Current and the Courage.
Yeah.
And we have the Pride and Gotham, which I think is the pick.
I think Orlando Gotham is the pick, yeah. Yeah, I think that has to be it. Got some good top four matches coming out of this.
And the Wave and the Spirit as well.
Yeah, I think we can.
But feel like it's going to be.
We can keep half an eye on that. But I think, I think Orlando Gotham is the move.
If that game turns out to be a clunker, we'll probably do Chicago Angel City.
Yeah, just because we'll have been there. I will have been in the press room. I can probably pull some good quotes. I can see Papa Lorne in the flesh, which is always great.
Mm.
But yeah, until then, folks, have a great week. Enjoy your weekend. If you're a Patreon subscriber, you will hear from us on Thursday with the mailbag.
All right.
Bye.
Talk soon.